All right, I think we will go ahead and get started here. My name is Steve Michelotti, and I am a member of the engineering team, the Azure Government Engineering Team. And I have a focus on developer enablement. And today we're going to talk about getting past lift and shift. You know, what we often see is a trend that repeats itself over and over again, which is some agency says, okay, we want to get ourselves on the cloud. We've been told we should do it, or we kind of know we should do it. We want to use taxpayer money more efficiently. We want to save money. Getting on the cloud is supposed to be the way to do that. And then what happens is they go through a whole process that effectively becomes a lift and shift, where they take their existing workloads and lift it over to the cloud. And that's good, and sometimes they can get efficiency from doing that. But sometimes what happens is, often what happens is, they come over and they're not really using those workloads efficiently, or they haven't really added any efficiency to their processes, or they just find a situation where they haven't efficiently provisioned how they're using the machines, and they're not using some of those higher level services. They don't have quite the automatic scalability they thought they were gonna have just by moving to the cloud. Because who knows what the cloud is anymore, right? Because there's so many different things and takes so many different forms. And so what we find is that it's really those agencies that can embrace more the platform as a services, the infrastructure as a service, that's the lift and shift, and you can get those workloads to the cloud. But it's not until you really start to migrate to the platform of the services that you get a lot more of the efficiencies, the ability to not have to worry about patching the OS or provisioning machines to do scalability. And we're going to talk about a lot of those aspects today as we go through. Now, just for my own context here, I'm just going to do a quick, very informal show of hands so I understand my audience. If you have development background, developer, raise your hand. Excellent. Okay. IT? Great. Maybe business decision makers? Okay, not as many, but a few, great. All right, so we have a mix, mostly developers, so that's gonna be good. We're gonna do a lot of demos, a lot of developer-focused demos, but we're gonna talk about a lot of these concepts in the beginning as well. So quick agenda here. I'm gonna spend the first 5 to 10 minutes talking about what is Azure Government. If all of you know this already, maybe you saw a couple of my talks yesterday, the first 5 minutes is going to be a repeat for you, but if you don't have familiarity, I think it's important to have that first 5 minute those first 5 minutes to give you that context. I think it's really important. I want to make sure every audience I speak to about Azure Government has a firm understanding of what is Azure Government. I'm going to show how to get started, how you connect to the portal, how you connect to PowerShell, and then we're going to spend the rest of the time in demos. So with that, let's get into our initial background context here. What is Azure Government? There's a couple of key takeaways here, but the main thing I want you to remember is that Azure Government is its own sovereign cloud. It's its own instance of Azure. So we think about Azure Commercial, Azure Public. This is this worldwide instance of Azure spanning multiple continents throughout the entire world. That's not what Azure Government is. Azure Government is an instance of Azure that is specific to the United States. There are multiple data centers, all in the United States. Isolated data centers specific to Azure Government, isolated network, isolated fiber, all specific to United States. And so the workloads that we put on Azure Government are federal, state and local, federal cabinet agencies. If you are affiliated with some kind of government, you are a candidate to go on Azure Government. But the data itself all stays within the continental U.S. It's not like it goes out to the internet and routed to some other country. It all stays in the United States. 100% of federal cabinet agencies currently are on the Microsoft Government Cloud. Some of these are Azure Government. Some are O365 for government. All 50 states, 6 million users, 7,000 federal, state, and local governments. Now, of course, this picture is a picture of Azure worldwide. And well, why do I put this up here for an Azure Government talk? The reason is because I think it is important to see the global reach that Microsoft has with Azure. 38 regions, two times as many as our closest competitor. And when you think about the billions and billions of dollars that Microsoft invests in the technology and security, and these are investments and learnings that, yes, all of Azure gets. So Azure Government, it takes advantage of those investments, obviously, as well. So that global reach is extremely important. Now, focusing a little bit more on just Azure Government. We have the 38 regions, Azure Worldwide. With Azure Government, we had the two existing regions. I should call these two original regions, East and Central. Then a few months ago, we had two additional regions come online. Still similar geographic, East and Central. These are DoD specific. I'll talk about this a little bit more as I go. This has DISA Level 5 certification, which is the highest level of certification you can get for unclassified workloads. And these are appropriate for DoD workloads, only DoD workloads in this data center. And then later this year, we have two additional regions coming online, Texas and Arizona. And so this is going to bring our total number of regions to 6, which is 6 times more than our closest competitor in the government space. And this is important for a couple of reasons. One is these data centers are located more than 500 miles apart from each other. And that 500 miles is an extremely important metric, because if some catastrophic event happens, maybe it's a horrible earthquake or a terrorist attack, whatever that catastrophic event may be, it's important to know that you have at least 500 miles in between your data centers so that you have that geo-redundancy. Is your data protected? Which parts of your application have you set up in a geo-redundant way? Tough to do with one data center, all right? But if you have, if you need true geo-redundancy in your app, you can do something like this when you have regions, the multiple regions that look like this. Okay, in addition to the data centers, we have ExpressRoute. 6 ExpressRoute locations. ExpressRoute is the technology whereby we are enable you to connect your on-prem data center into our Azure cloud, specifically Azure Government. Again, a little bit different from some of our competitors. Our ExpressRoute locations for Gov are dedicated to Gov. We're not piggybacking off our public infrastructure or anything like that. The fiber is dedicated to government. You have your own private line that goes to the meet-me points out of your data center and into our data center. The data is encrypted all the way to the meet-me point. You can put an appliance after that if you so choose to. But the ExpressRoute locations, you know, pick the one that's geographically closest to you. This enables you to securely connect privately without going out to the internet between your data center and your setup on Azure Government. Compliance. Obviously, compliance is a huge thing for all of Azure worldwide. The second row is the one we care about here for US Gov. We have FedRAMP Moderate, FedRAMP High, DISA Level 2, 4, and 5, ITAR, CGIS, 53 compliance offerings worldwide. Of course, as I mentioned, we feel pretty good about our DISA Level 5. CGIS, 24 states, 26. I can't even keep track. This number seems to change every month. But the states that we do have, 24 states, covers 2/3 of the U.S. population. So we have additional CGIS agreements with additional states coming seemingly every month. FedRAMP, we had FedRAMP Moderate in 2015. We got FedRAMP High last year. And we have FedRAMP on 32 services in scope. I think this is 2 to 3 times more services in scope of FedRAMP than our nearest competitor. Azure Blueprint. So we talk about building a compliant app. And a lot of times people are under the misconception, well, if I just deploy my app to Azure Government, that means I'm compliant, right? Not exactly. It means, yes, you are deploying on a compliant infrastructure, and you're going to have a lot less work to do than if you're in your own data center. But you, as a developer, still have some work. You can't be, you know, putting passwords in the database in clear text and that kind of thing. You have some work you got to do. And if I know all the developers in the room love to read 1,000-page documents on all the certification process you have to do, it's very difficult. And so what the Azure Blueprint program enables you to do is to streamline that process for you. It shows you, here are the things we're taking care of for you because you're on Azure. Here are the things you need to take care of, part of your responsibility, and it streamlines that process. So if I'm a developer sitting there and I've got a 1,000-page compliance doc in front of me, I hear the word streamline and my ears perk up because yes, please help me with this arduous process. And that's what the Azure Blueprint program can help you with. There's different versions of it as well, depending if your app needs to be FedRAMPed or DoD L4, L5, you can pick the appropriate version of the blueprint. And just another kind of plug here for our DoD regions, L5 mission workloads, that is, we're seeing a definite uptick now because we support L5. The Azure Gov Marketplace, now 180 offerings in the marketplace. You can deploy Linux VMs if anyone was in my open source on Azure Gov talk yesterday afternoon. There's all kinds of offerings in the VMs, open source solutions, Linux, you name it. And in fact, just in general, in the last 3 to 4, maybe 5 months, the number of innovations that have been happening on Azure Government has been truly astonishing. I mean, if you were someone that looked at Azure Government a year ago, you might say, okay, yeah, you got some websites, you have storage, and some cool stuff here. But the number of things that have been added in the last 3 to 5 months have been staggering in terms of really getting much closer to that parity with Azure Public, despite all the challenges, of course, with making sure you have your own dedicated fiber and data centers. I mean, it's not a trivial task to be able to do that. But we feel real good about the progress that's been happening over the last few months. Okay. Now that we've talked a little bit about what is Azure Government, let's get a little bit more to the topic at hand here. And let's talk about getting beyond lift and shift. So you heard me mention compliance. And when you want to deploy a compliant app, there's some responsibilities that are under the control of the hardware. What responsibilities does the code need to do? There's lots of responsibility that goes into building a compliant app. In this diagram here, if we look at the far left, anything in blue is your responsibility. And if you deploy an on-prem app, guess what? It's all your responsibility. Of course, obviously, 100% your responsibility. You've got to be responsible for the soil of where the data center is sitting and the networking and storage and how the servers are racked and all kinds of stuff. And then, of course, the network virtualization, everything on up the stack. And eventually, you'll get to actually write some code at the top and, you know, have your database layer. If you do a lift and shift, you get to the second column. And lift and shift isn't bad. I mean, there's a lot of orange there. The orange is Microsoft taking care of that for you. So there's a lot of advantages to be have just lifting and shifting your workloads over there. Yeah, and if you want to do that, we're happy to help you. And you get some lots of advantages here. You don't have to worry about the data center anymore. Microsoft is taking care of that for you. You know, our data centers are staffed by only US screen persons. Networking, Microsoft is taking care of that for you, and you can create your own virtual networks however you want in Azure, and you can create subnets, and you have a lot of control over how the firewall rules work and what ports you're opening up. Virtualization, servers, all of that is Microsoft is taking care of for you. So even in a lift and shift situation, that's great. You can get a lot of efficiencies versus having this on your own on-prem data center, and Microsoft is worrying about managing that data center for you. You don't have to pay someone to do it. Microsoft's doing that for you. However, you still got some work to do. You've got to worry about the OS. Oh, you have to patch the OS. You have to keep the OS up to date. You know, that's money of someone's time they've got to do. You've got to plan for downtime, middleware, runtime. These are all things you have to think about. How am I keeping these machines healthy? How am I keeping them up and running? Now we get to platform as a service. This third column here, this is where we're focusing our talk today. And once you get to platform as a service, this is where you really get additional efficiency, because now you don't have to worry about patching the OS. Microsoft's doing that for you. We'll do that transparently for you behind the scenes without any disturbance in your app. The middleware, the runtime, how the fabric is going to work on, you know, are you going to do auto upgrades and rolling upgrades? Do you want to incorporate self-healing in your application? These are the types of services and features that Microsoft can help you with once you get to these higher level services like platform as a services. Now, of course, you've still got to write your code. So, of course, we have a couple blue boxes at the top where you've got to make decisions where you're going to store your data, you've got to write your code. But as a developer, that's what I want to spend my time on. I want to spend my time on that blue box up at the top writing code. I don't want to spend time on all this stuff down here. Okay? And of course, if software as a service, someone else is doing everything for you. So this third one is what we're going to focus on today. And again, infrastructure as a service. This is the same diagram in that second column, which was infrastructure as a service. And we have the security control families here. And you know, there's only a few people in the world that probably know what all these letters are. So I've put some of them off to the side. AC is access control. AT is awareness and training. And you can see which ones are taken into account at which levels. And of course, as we go to platform as a service, that diagram becomes much more orange, which makes me excited as a developer because less things I have to worry about. Now, there's another aspect I want to just mention before we start diving into all the demos, which is how we think about how these machines are being deployed. We have two ends of the spectrum. We have the traditional model, think IaaS, lift and shift. And then on the right side, we have the more cloud model, platform as a service. So in the more traditional model, you're talking about things like virtual machines. I'm just taking a virtual machine here and putting a virtual machine there. And we say, okay, yes, I have a virtual machine, great. But then what happens is you deploy 100 virtual machines to the cloud, and what's happening? All those machines are sitting there at 1% CPU utilization, maybe 2% CPU utilization. You're not spending your money wisely at all. That's not an effective spend at all. You're wasting money. You're wasting it, okay? The whole concept of the cloud is pay for what you use. And you're paying, when you use a virtual machine, you're paying 99% of the money is going towards unutilized CPU. You don't want that, okay? Anyway, so you have virtual machines, you have virtual machine scale sets where you can get some grouping with your virtual machines to assist with failover and that sort of thing. But as we start to go to the right side, you can start to use these higher level services like container services. Maybe people are using Docker with an orchestration engine like Swarm, or even Microsoft's technology such as Service Fabric. And what Service Fabric allows you to do, or any of these container technologies allow you to do, think of this concept of density. How tightly are you packing these VMs? So you might have 30 applications that are not very, you know, not high volume, high throughput, anything like that. And you could run 30 applications on two servers, no problem. And the servers wouldn't even break a sweat. But maybe you have this other application over here that's very important and high throughput, and you want to scale this one application out on 20 servers. Great, you can do that too. So think about what I'm saying here. 30 applications on two servers, this one other special application on 20 servers, or whatever your topology looks like. You get to decide that. So rather than having 100 VMs sitting there at 1% CPU, you can have maybe 20 or 30 VMs sitting there at 50% CPU, 60% CPU, 70. Now you're making efficient use of resources. Now, of course, you don't want your CPU above 80, 90%. Now you need to add more VMs to make sure that you know, you're not going to be choking your VMs. But it's that type of maturity of design that you want to get to so that you can be in control of how am I tightly packing these VMs. It's this traditional model to just think, okay, how many boxes am I running on? And all right, I need 100 boxes here. Don't worry about the physical hardware. Worry about the utilization. The utilization. Pack these, you know, all of these concepts, whether you're talking about Microsoft Service Fabric or Docker containers, it's this. The concepts are what really match. Even though the technologies may differ, the concepts are very similar in terms of how you're going to orchestrate all of those different options. And so those are the areas when you can get to that auto scaling, say, oh, normally I can run at 10 servers, no problem. Oh, we had a spike in traffic, let's scale up to 20. All right, right now we're not really getting much traffic, let's scale down to 5. So I don't, you know, pay all this money for, you know, usages, you know, resources that I don't need right now. That's really where you want to get to. Okay. So having said that, let's start diving into code samples. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a relatively traditional app. It's going to be an ASP.NET Core app that talks to a database, and we are going to use the PaaS services on Azure, Platform as a Service. I'm going to show you how to use Azure Active Directory to authenticate with your app. We're going to eventually deploy this to an Azure web app on Azure Gov. We're going to use an Azure SQL database, not a database that's sitting in a VM somewhere, a managed database. We're going to use Azure Storage Queue. We're going to use an Azure Redis Cache. These are all managed services. You don't have to think about the VMs these services are running on. We're just going to think of them as a service. These are platform as a service. Okay. Let me go back. All right, so I'm going to leave this diagram up here. We can refer back to it. All right, so we're going to spend the rest of the time in demos. All right, so if you came here to see PowerPoint the whole time, you're going to be disappointed because we're going to go and look at demos now. Okay, So the first thing is, let's come over to the AzureGov portal, which is right here. You know I'm in the AzureGov portal when you can see right here it says Microsoft Azure Government, and the URL is portal.azure.us, not .com. All right, so I'm in the AzureGov portal. And what I want to do is, let's just go ahead and create a new empty website right now. And you can see I have a couple of websites already in there created, created in some demos yesterday. And so I'm just going to click new and say, yep, we're going to click a new web app here, and let's create a new web app. And this is just going to be a simple task manager application. So we'll call it Gov Task Manager. Spell it right. Manager. And let's create a new resource group for it. A resource group is simply a logical container of resources on Azure. So we'll call this Gov Task Manager RG. And we want to select an app service plan. I'm going to create a new plan, and we're just going to call this GovTask MDR plan. And we can select a location. I'm going to select Virginia, US Gov Virginia. Notice these are not the data centers you would see in public. You can select a pricing tier here. You can view all. And you can see we have premium, one core, two core. Now, what's interesting is there is a VM backing this behind the scenes. All right, so as a developer, you get to kind of decide how much that's abstracted away from you or not. We want it to sort of be abstracted away from you, but the app service plan is technically the underlying VM that happens here. So when you're using Azure Web Apps, this is how you are able to control, are these three apps running on the same VM? Or are these 10 apps running on one VM? Or is this one app running on its own VM? Is this one app running on 10 VMs? It's going to happen with the app service plan. So that's why we are selecting the size of the machine right here. Now, I'm not selecting the instances, but I am selecting the size right here. So we'll just come in and say, okay, let's just do standard one. That's fine. I can always scale up if I want to. But for now, I'm just going to create that single instance, and we'll let that provision the app right there. All right, did I click create already? All right, click create. All right, so it's validating, and now it's submitted this deployment, and it's going to take a few seconds to provision the web app. Now, what's happening here behind the scenes, and we'll just leave this up so we can see the progress bar working, this is only going to take a few seconds. It's just going to take 10, 20 seconds, and it's going to provision a web app for us. We don't have to wait, 10 minutes for it to spin up a brand new VM, because Azure keeps some of these around fresh for us, so we can provision these up in seconds. But it's giving me my own dedicated VM, my own instance here, so that I can immediately, and you can see the deployment has already succeeded, so that I can immediately start deploying and working on it. So I can come over here. There is the Gov Task Manager web app that I just created, and I can see that I already have a fresh URL here. I'm going to click that URL. You're going to see the URL is azurewebsites.us, not .net, which you typically see when you create a web app in Azure. And we just have this blank blue single page thing saying, yes, web app successfully created. Okay, and another thing I want to do is, I'm actually going to be adding a Redis cache later in the demo. Sometimes that takes longer than 10 seconds to provision, so I'm going to cheat a little bit right now and add that now. But that's how you know it's a real demo, because I'm actually adding this before your eyes here, right? So we're just going to come in here and say Gov Tasks Manager is going to be the name of the cache. We're going to add it to the existing resource group that I just selected, which is the Gov Task Manager resource group. There it's in Virginia, and we're good to go there. All right, so Gov Tasks Manager, yep, create. Okay, and we'll let that create. That might take 5-10 minutes to create, but we'll do other stuff while that Redis cache is provisioning itself. Okay, so back over here, we have our website that has been created. There it is, Gov Task Manager. Now, we've logged into the portal. We've created a web app. Pretty easy to do in Azure or Azure Gov. Another theme you're going to see here with Azure Gov is it's just Azure. So for those of you familiar with regular Azure, this didn't look any different other than maybe a little bit different endpoint to get in the portal. Once the website was provisioned, had a little bit different looking endpoint than what you would see in Azure Public. But everything else is the same tools. It's the same underlying technology. It's just Azure. So let's now connect to Azure with PowerShell. You're going to see the same theme here. It's just Azure. If I've worked with regular Azure with PowerShell before, it's going to look the same. Maybe just one little tweak I need to do in order to connect to Azure Government. All right, so let's do that now. I'm going to come in here, and there's the service management style mode for PowerShell, and there's also Resource Manager. I'm going to show both. So I can come in here and say get Azure environment. Okay, and let's just do that. Okay, in fact, let me run that one more time, and let's say select just the name column, just to make it easier to see. And you can see these are the environments we have. Normally, everyone just thinks of this first one, which is Azure Cloud, right? This Azure Public, Azure Commercial, however you want to say it. The one we care about here is this one, Azure US Government. You might notice there's a couple other that did show up. Azure Government isn't the only sovereign cloud. There's Azure China and Azure German Cloud. Of course, we care about Azure US Government here, all right? So let's do get Azure location. Get Azure location. And in fact, let's do that to select name again, make it a little bit easier to see. And here are the locations, all right? Now I have a highly privileged account, so you may not see all of these options. You might just see Virginia and Iowa, but you notice you're not getting Asia data centers here. This is only continental US. And let's run another command, get Azure website. And we're gonna see the list of websites. And oh, by the way, here's the one I just created in the portal, Gov Task Manager. So we can see our list of websites, all right? Now let's log in, let me clear that off, and let's log in using Azure Resource Manager. So what I'm gonna do, I have to say log in Azure RM account, and I have to give it the environment switch, environment or environment name is the easy one, and I have to say Azure US Government. So this is the one thing I have to do differently to actually allow me to connect to Azure Government. If I don't do this, it's gonna assume Azure Public, and you're gonna be like, how can I not connect? I just created this website up here, how come it's not being shown? So we're gonna do Azure US Government. I'm gonna put in my username. Hopefully I spell it all right. And password. I must have done it right, okay. So here we go, on Microsoft.com, it's on Microsoft.com, and I can see that I've got an account, a tenant ID, a subscription name, and I'm connected. And now once I'm connected, I can run commands like get Azure RM for Resource Manager web app. Okay, let's run that. And that's gonna get all the web apps that I have created. And you can see for each one, you can see various pieces of information. There's TechSummit Core. There's the Gov Task Manager that I just created a few minutes ago. You saw me create, all right? So getting started with Azure Government is actually, there it is right there, is actually pretty straightforward. We can connect to the portal just like regular Azure. We can connect with PowerShell just like regular Azure, but we have to give it the environment switch. Maybe some of you prefer traditional command line over PowerShell. Well, you can use our Azure cross-platform command line instead of PowerShell if you want. And we have our nice little cheesy ASCII art up here, right? Azure, okay. And we can run similar commands. So let me come down here and let's say Azure login. And I'm gonna say username. And I gotta type it correct here. And once again, I have to give it the environment. So I'm giving it a username and environment, Azure US Government. Okay, let me put in my password. And that's gonna authenticate me. Must use that dash dash environment switch. That is the one key to allow you to connect to Azure Government, whereas otherwise, it's gonna assume Azure Public, and you're like, how come I can't connect to my Gov subscription? This is just trying to send me to an Azure Public subscription. That's the one switch you need to know. And once you're in there, you can, you know, Azure, web app list. What version do I have installed here? You know what, let's go to, oh, it's site, Azure site. Azure site list, okay. And we can get a list of our websites, and here we go. There is the Gov Task Manager website that I just created in my portal. So we've done portal, we've done PowerShell, and we've done traditional Azure command line. Okay, very easy to get started with Azure Gov. Okay, so now let's talk about the application itself. Here I have Visual Studio up right here, and I have this running in a local instance, and here's my Gov Task Manager, okay? And this is just a traditional ASP.NET Core application talking to a local SQL Server database. And you can see I have some tasks here. I have to deliver an Azure Gov presentation. I have to write an Azure Gov blog post. I have to turn in my status report. I can add a new task to this list here. And I can edit existing tasks, and I can go from there. Why is that taking so long? This is, and I just want to kind of point out right here, this is running locally. It's just a local host, okay? And come on, there we go. Okay, I guess first time it took a long time to spin back up. I'll just say deliver lift and shift presentation and whatever, okay? And then status is in progress, I think it's safe to say. And then let's say that's 3/7/2017, okay? So I've saved a new task, deliver lift and shift presentation. I can, make an edit to it, XX. I can come in here and delete it. But we have basic CRUD operations, C-R-U-D, create, read, update, delete. Basic CRUD applications or functionality on our little task to-do list here. Okay. So this is talking to a local SQL Server database. If you look right here, this is running on my local machine, S. Michelotti SQL Express. There's my tasks database right there, my tasks table. I can right-click and say select all the rows. I just want to prove it to you here. There it is. Give a good presentation, prepare all demos, write the blog post. Here are the same ones that you're corresponding to here. We can see the completed task is prep for Azure Gov demo. Okay, so there's the four rows there, 3 and 1. And there are the four rows right in there. So I'm talking to a local database. Pretty straightforward app, nothing fancy, but it'll serve our purpose for the demo. Okay, so the first thing I want to do is I want to add Azure Active Directory authentication for my app. So there's a few steps we need to do in order to accomplish this. Let's come over here, back to the portal, and I'm going to go down to Azure Active Directory. And I want to add a new app registration. Of course, we can go manage users and groups, but we want to click app registration, because this is an app what we're building that's going to register with Active Directory. So I'm just going to click add right here. And we're going to call this Gov Task Manager. In fact, I'm going to put TS for Tech Summit, okay? And the sign-on URL, let's just grab it from here, copy, and we're just going to paste it right in there. There's my sign-on URL. Let me take out that tasks, okay? And we will go ahead and click create. So this is just an app registration that allows us to say, okay, this is the app in Active Directory. We might have 10 different apps that want to use Active Directory authentication. This is the one for our app. Okay, and there it is. It's created. There's our Gov Task Manager. Now, what we want to do is we want to be able to put the configuration in here. So I'm going to go to my app settings in my ASP.NET app. And there's a couple things we need to take into account. First off, the AAD instance, you can see right here, this says login.microsoftonline.com. Well, this is Azure Gov, so we have to do login-us. That's one difference between Azure Gov versus regular Azure. And then what we need to do is we want to make sure that we have the app registration, the ID pasted in there. So we have this application ID, this GUID 517. I'm going to copy that. And I'm going to put that in for my client ID right there, 517, whatever that GUID is. And then on the domain, I know this is running michelotti.gov.onmicrosoft.com. That's the domain I'm using. And then the tenant ID, it wants our tenant ID from our Active Directory itself. So let's go grab that. I'm in my Active Directory already, so let's just say properties. And I'm going to grab the directory ID right here, copy EE28. And paste it right in there. Okay, so I've got my authentication Azure AD configuration now put in place. I'm gonna go to my ASP.NET Core code here and uncomment this code. And you can see this just using OpenID Connect and sending those configuration values that you just saw in that JSON file, putting them all right here. So I've added authentication. I also wanna make sure that I lock down my MVC controller, so I'm gonna add the authorized endpoint to the tasks controller and to the home controller. So let's run this again. All right. So I've added an app registration in Azure Active Directory, and I have added that configuration, that metadata we needed from that app registration into my app. And now I'm rerunning my app. And actually, I'm running this on an incognito window. So let me go back over here, because I'm already authenticated over there. So let me refresh this right here. Okay, and that's forcing me to log in, all right? So, because I was already authenticated on the other browser window to the portal and everything. And notice it says GovTask Manager TS for Tech Summit, all right? So that you know this is hitting our actual app registration, and I can customize this page if I want. If I want a pretty little graphic that I want to customize this login page for my organization, my application, I can do that. So now let's put in my username, Steve Michelotti at MichelottiGov on Microsoft.com, and log in. It's used the MVC authentication, and bam, now I'm authenticated to the app, and we can see right here, hello, Steve Michelotti, and I have authentication just using ASP.NET Core to my application using Azure Active Directory. All right? So what we're going to do here is we're going to take this in sections. I'm just a developer writing code on my local laptop here, and I'm going to do this in sections. I've got Active Directory. Now I'm going to move the database, and we're going to incrementally change things about this app. So by the end, we'll have the entire thing running in the cloud. The app itself is still running locally, but it's doing the authentication from Azure Active Directory in the cloud. Before I go on to the next section, database, any questions? Anything I've done so far? Relatively straightforward so far. Okay, so next thing I want to do is I want to connect to an Azure SQL database rather than this local instance of SQL Server proper. So what I've done here is I've actually already provisioned a database because I didn't want you to have to wait to watch that provision. And let me show you that. I have SQL databases right here, and I have this one called GovTaskManagerDB right here, okay? And if we look at the server name right here, you can see that it doesn't look that much different from what you'd expect in Azure Commercial, but the endpoint looks slightly different. So again, same theme here. Azure Gov is just like developing for Azure Public, except you're going to see endpoints are going to be a little different, and you have to make sure, oh yeah, normally I would do this in public, but in just a slight tweak for Azure Gov, and then everything else is going to be the same. So the endpoint here is .database.usgovcloudapi.net. But the good news is we can still connect to an Azure SQL database with tools we're familiar with. So I already have SQL Management Studio running right here, and it's connecting to my local instance. So I'm just going to do a new connection, and you can see right here we have Michelotti East, govcloudapi.net. There's the one that I already had in, so we're just going to select that one, connect, and now I am connected to, there it is, GovTaskManager database, and it's sitting up there. I've already got the tables. If I do a select from my tasks table, it's empty. Okay, so the task table is empty. Okay, so let's connect to it here. I already have my app settings file here, and you can see this default connection string. I'm just going to put an X. It's kind of like commenting it out. And let's add a connection string for it. Copy, paste. Okay, so default connection. So my default connection is now running govcloudapi.net, initial catalog. It's basically the connection string pointing to that database sitting up in the cloud. And now let's run this again. And actually, all I have to do is refresh this page over here. Let's refresh this. Wait, hold on. Let me do a quick rebuild. Okay. Yes. Now let me refresh. Yes. So the question is, where did I grab the connection string from? And I just had it in my, I just had a snippet that I just pasted on real quick. But where would you grab it from if you were actually doing it? All you have to do is, if you look at the portal, and this is true regardless of whether you're in just regular Azure Commercial versus Azure Government, you want to look at the endpoint of your database here. So if we look at the server name right here, my server name is Michelotti. .sql-east.databaseusgov, okay? So that's my server name. Also, when I set up my Server, in fact, I'm in databases right now, but if I go to SQL Server right here, there's SQL, Microsoft SQL East, I can see that I have a server admin named SQL Admin that has some password that was set up when I created that account. So it's just a regular .NET connection string. So if we look right here, it's server TCP colon, server name, initial catalog, gov task manager, okay, user equals SQL admin, password and password, okay? It's just regular standard SQL connection. The server name is the one people care about, and that's the one that you get from the portal. Okay, so this page is, yes, question in the back. Okay, so the question is that SQL Server running on a VM? Yes and no. Okay, you have a couple of options when you're talking about databases in the cloud. One is you can provision your own VM, you can manually install SQL Server yourself, you can bring your own license, you're responsible for patching that VM, you're responsible for the upkeep, you're responsible for everything. That's not what I'm doing. What I'm doing here is I'm using Azure SQL Database. This is a managed SQL offering. You don't have to worry about bringing your own SQL Server license. You don't have to worry about the underlying VM. Don't think about the underlying VM. Let Microsoft worry about that for you. You don't have to worry about, is this SQL Server spread out on 10 VMs or 1 VMs? Microsoft will handle that for you. It's handling all the patching, all the OS, the multiple instances. It also handles the data redundancy. So when you insert a row into the database, it automatically creates three copies replicated in that region. And you can additionally set up SQL Database to do additional replications in other regions 500 miles away. You know, try to accomplish that with your own on-prem SQL Server, and that's a feat of engineering, okay? So when we talk about using these managed databases or managed systems, in this case, we're talking about a managed database like SQL Server, you are getting so much out of the box, just forgetting the fact that you can don't have to pay someone to patch the OS and install the SQL Server and keep make sure it's always up. But you're also getting geo-replication. You're also getting scalability. You get all this by using SQL Server, by using SQL Database on Azure. And oh, by the way, me as a developer, I get to be blissfully unaware of all this stuff happening behind the scenes on my behalf because I just get to use SQL Management Studio and connect to it. It looks the same to me. I'm using the same SQL statements. I can't tell any difference. I just write my code the same way. I'm using Entity Frameworks. Beautiful. So when we're talking about a managed database, Microsoft's doing that for you. Another question back there. So the question is related to how much you're controlling the patching. Patching of what is my question? You are not going to think about the patching. Microsoft is handling that for you. They will handle the patching for you with no downtime to your application. You don't have to worry about the patching when you're using platform as a service. If you're using infrastructure as a service, then yes, you must control the patching. You must control the schedule. But if it's platform as a service, Microsoft is doing that for you. In a compliant way, et cetera, et cetera.
Sorry, follow up. But the agency may not want all the patching from Microsoft grabbing the data, right? Is there a control in place?
So the question is, the agency may not want the patching from Microsoft, which That's not the world we're living in here. So Microsoft must keep everything. so Microsoft must keep everything compliant. They must keep things up to date. If there's a specific instance, we can talk about it offline. But the thing to make sure here is that you're deploying onto a platform. Your code works on a platform. So your code should not be dependent on like an OS level thing. But again, if there's some specific one, we can take that offline afterward. Yes?
Totally new to the SQL Database type, so are there things in SQL Server that are not included in SQL Database?
Yes. So the question is, okay, so there's this managed offering called SQL Database, which is like SQL Server in the cloud. Are there things that are in regular SQL Server that I control myself that perhaps are not yet in SQL Database and Azure? Am I understanding your question correctly? There are, but the list has become shockingly small. So several years ago, when SQL Database was a newer offering, we could point you to this long list of things that were in regular SQL, you know, change data capture and all these things that were not in SQL Database. There are still things that exist in SQL Server that are not in SQL Database, but the parity that SQL Database has now gotten compared to regular SQL Server, it's astonishing in the last few years. So you can find the list, it's documented. Microsoft is is very good about putting that documentation up, but the list is not large, as it, especially compared to 5 years ago. Yes? The question is CLR-based stored procedures using SQL Database. I cannot remember the answer to that question. It has always been no. I believe the answer is still no. I can check for that. I can check on that for you afterward. But traditionally, the answer has been no. Okay, other questions? Yes? So the question is it still using public routable IPs for SQL? So, and you can set these things up. There's a couple of different ways you can set it up. So for example, if you have to have a completely self-contained environment, you actually can set it up in such a way that with network security groups and NSGs, you can keep everything within your network. So, and again, when we talk about publicly routable IPs, you know, it's still going over our fiber, so you know, it's staying in the government cloud, but you can also use NSGs to set it up in such a way that actually everything stays within your network.
Just to piggyback on this question, so I think what he's getting at, and we have the same issue, is can you join Azure SQL instance to your VNet
So the question is, can you join Azure SQL database to your VNet? When you say join to your VNet, you just mean that something in your VNet can call out to it? I've heard of people doing some things on that, but that's going to have to be one we can take offline because I don't want to talk out of turn on that one. Yeah. Okay, cool. All right, so let's just keep going with our demo here. So I'm now in this new database that's sitting in SQL Server. I'm just going to add a couple tasks to it. Let's just do it real quick. Test one. Let's say it's in progress. Let's add test two. Not started, and one more. Test three, okay. And we can also come in and let's say we edit test three. We can say that the status is now complete. Okay, so it goes away, test three, but if I wanna see completed tasks, I can go over here and I can see test three is in the list of completed tasks, okay? So now if we go over here to my SQL, well, I just did this query and it was no rows. I'm going to re-execute this query by just clicking the execute button, and now I can see there are my three rows. All right, so kind of just want to prove it to you. It's not smoke and mirrors. This is actually was a local SQL database. Now it's a SQL database running in Azure, but I can still use the tools that are familiar with me. Okay, now we're making progress here. We have our web app. We've integrated Azure Active Directory. We've added Azure SQL Database. Now, the next thing I want to do is I want to add a storage queue because maybe I want to have some additional process such that when someone marks a task complete, we maybe write a message to a queue and there might be some other process monitoring the queue that when it notices new messages coming on the queue, it does something else. All right, we're not going to implement the something else, but let's at least write a message to a queue when someone marks a task complete. So what I'm going to do here is let's go back to the portal. And let's click on storage accounts. And I am going to add a new storage account. And we're just going to call this tasks MGR storage. Storage, okay. I think I spelled it right. That's fine. Resource manager, standard, premium. And we have different options here, locally redundant storage, geo-redundant storage, and this controls, are we going to, how many copies of the data are we going to keep? Are we going to put it in multiple regions? You know, depending on what you select, there's a price difference. And I'm just going to use the existing resource group that is the Gov Task Manager Resource Group, because this is the logical container for my resources. We're going to stick with Virginia, and I'm going to click Create. and we're going to create a storage account. So when we talk about storage accounts in Azure, we're talking about traditional things such as table storage, not SQL Server tables, just regular tables, schemaless tables. We're talking about blob storage. We're talking about Azure queues, storage queues. So it's not service bus queues, but it's traditional Azure storage queues. Also Azure files. So when you just provision a storage account, you get all four of those things, files, queues, blobs, and tables. Now, for my example here, I'm just going to use queues for the demo, but those are all options. Okay, so this will just take a couple of additional seconds to complete. And then I want to show Azure Storage Explorer. So Azure Storage Explorer is a tool right here that enables us, and actually let me change this to the light theme. That might be a little easier to see. This is a free tool that you can use to deal with Azure storage in general. It's recently been updated to work with Azure Government. It used to be that you had to kind of hack in the endpoints with Azure Government, but now it is supported out of the box. Okay, that is deployment still running. And I'm going to just expand this here and just to be able to show that we have storage accounts that are already created. So here's an HDI storage account from a demo I did yesterday. We have blob containers right here. And I have a blob container and a subcontainer called HDI. And this has its own subfolders and subcontainers. And okay, that is finally complete. So I can stop stalling, refresh. Okay. And now when I refresh, let me expand this one more time. And there is the Tasks Manager storage account that I just created right there. And I can choose whether I want to use blobs, files, queues, or tables right here. So as I mentioned, I'm going to use queues. So I'm going to just right-click queue here and say create queue. And for the create queue, we're just going to call this tasks complete is going to be the name of our queue. And of course, the queue is empty. We haven't put anything in it yet. Okay. Now also, the thing we want to realize is that the queue, let me flip over here, let's refresh, and click Tasks Manager Storage. Okay. We also, if I click here, let's go to Properties. And actually, let me go down to what I wanted to show was the endpoint, just to make sure you know those are different. So we come in here, blobs. It's recently changed. But the key here is that like other items in Azure, you are also going to have endpoint differences, and it's going to end in usgovcloudapi.net, just like it would for like we were showing for the database. So I just want to make sure everyone was aware of that as well. Okay. Yes, but it's not shown here. Okay. And you can also get your access keys from here. Okay, so there's our task manager storage, our access keys. We can use that. Now, I also want to show you how you can consume this from code. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to come to my back to my app settings file here. And let's just put in here. There's my storage. Tasks manager storage, account key here, and I have to have an endpoint suffix, usgovcloudapi.net. A little bit different than the suffix you're used to seeing. So the account key, let's come over here to the portal. Let me grab the key. I'm just going to copy this and paste this here. Now, I am just putting it right in config. You could secure this with Key Vault. You could put this in the portal if you want to secure store this a little bit more securely. But for this demo, I want to show you how to consume the API. All right, so you'll permit me with putting the account key in the configuration file. Okay, so with that, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to use ASP.NET Core dependency injection. If those of you are familiar with ASP.NET Core dependency injection, great, this will look normal to you. If not, it may be a little weird, but the main thing is I want to show you how to actually work with the API from a C# perspective, because it's slightly different just to get past that first line of code, and then everything else is the same as what you always expect in regular Azure Public. So I'm going to come down here, and I'm just going to put a little snippet of code in. And this is going to be this right here. Okay. So what we have here is I'm getting the section for storage, get section storage. This is just referring to this, getting this section for storage. It has three things, account name, account key, and suffix. And what we have here is I need to be able to configure a function that can instantiate a new instance of the cloud storage account right here. So I actually have to use the constructor for the cloud storage account that takes in storage credentials and an endpoint, okay? So if I do F12 here, I just want you to see, I'm using this constructor right here. Storage credentials, endpoint suffix, and then it has this use HTTPS is true at the end. Normally when people are working with Azure Blob Storage, they just use this constructor that takes storage credentials and they're done. And that works great if you're using Azure Public. But my job here is to teach you how to use Azure Government. You have to use a slightly different constructor. Rather than the one that you're used to using, which is just storage credentials, you want to use this one, storage credentials plus endpoint suffix, because this endpoint suffix is where we need to specify the govcloudapi.net. Oh, now I know I'm on Azure Government using Azure Government Sovereign Cloud, all different endpoints, isolated network, isolated data centers. Okay. So if we come back here, we can see this is cloud storage account. I'm passing in my storage credentials, account name, and account key, and here I'm passing in my endpoint suffix right there. All right. And then I can just add a little dependency injection here, invoke this. Add transient is what adds the dependency injection. And anytime anyone asks for a cloud storage account, it will invoke this method, create cloud queue client. All right. So with that in place, now I can just go to my actual repository that does the data access. Let's come in here. So I have the services. Here's my task manager service. This is using Entity Framework context here to interact with the database. So I'm going to come in here and just inject it into my constructor. So it's going to be a cloud queue clients. Let's call it queue clients. And let's assign it in the constructor, queue client equals queue clients. Control dot, we'll generate the field on line 16. Now we can actually come use it down here. Insert or update. Anytime someone inserts or updates, if that task is complete, we want to put a message on a queue. Okay? So let's come in here. Here it is. If the status equals completed, then we want to get the queue reference. Remember I created that queue called tasks complete? Get a reference to it. Step two. Create a new cloud message, which is just serialize this task to JSON. And then task complete queue, add message. All right, that add message, you'll add a message to the queue. All right, let's rerun this. Okay, so let's let it recompile, rebuild. Okay, let's come back over here actually, and let me refresh this window. Okay, so let's come over here to, let's just add a new task. Test four, and let's say it's in progress, save, okay? If we flip over here to the Storage Explorer, I'm just gonna click refresh on the queue. Nothing's there, right? We don't want it to be because that task is not complete, all right? But now I'm gonna come back and edit test four, and I'm going to mark the item as complete and click save. We don't see it here now anymore because it's being put over here in this list of my completed tasks. But because in that line of, I added that little if statement that said, if the task is completed, then add the message to the storage queue. So now when we go back to the queue, I'm going to click refresh again, and there it is, okay? So we've added that message to the queue, and that was that's the JSON representation of that message. We can see there it is, test four right there. So when we're dealing with these higher order services, you saw how easy it was for me to do. I just provision a storage account in Azure, add a queue right here, have my C# libraries. The C# libraries, I deal with them exactly like I do with Azure Public with one difference. I have to use that special constructor where I can put the endpoint specifying it's Azure Gov. Other than that, it's just Azure, just regular Azure. It's really easy to get started on Azure Government. just have to make sure the endpoint names are different, but you can see how easy it is. I didn't have to install MSMQ or some complex queuing service. I just created a storage account. Microsoft's handling that for me. I don't have to worry about, oh, what's the scalability of this? Is this queue service going to start falling over if I start giving a lot of requests? Microsoft is handling that scalability for me. I'm just using their queue service. Okay, questions on this? Yes. Yeah, so the question is, all these little things I'm doing, like the special constructor and passing in these endpoints, are they documented somewhere? Yes, they are on our documentation site. And that's a really good question because, you know, a year ago, we may not have been the best at documenting all that. But we've, I think, gotten a lot better. And if you find something in, what is it, aka.ms.azuregovdocs, yes? Okay, here's our documentation. And so you have getting started, how to, developer guide, login to the portal. If you find something that is not documented, send me an email directly. I will get it documented. Because, again, my role is developer enablement. I want it to be as easy as possible. So if you find something that, hey, yeah, Michelotti claimed it was on the documentation, but I can't find it, then email me directly, and we will get it fixed. Well, if you just search for Azure Government, it comes right to it. But it's akams.azuregovdocs. And in the slides, you can download all the slides. All the links are in the slides as well. Okay. All right, let's keep going here. So now what I want to do is I want to add, let's keep looking at our picture here. We've got our Active Directory. We've got our SQL database. We've got our storage queue. Let's add our Redis cache. If we look at this application here, when I click Add New Task, I have this drop-down list of statuses, not started, in progress, deferred, completed, and those statuses are stored in a database somewhere. It sure is wasteful for me to every time have to go to the database just to load this page. The list is like never changing, and so that type of data is a reference data that's ideal for caching. Let's just query from the database the first time, then let's store it off in a cache, and the next time someone comes in the screen, let's just grab it from the cache. We don't have to go to our database, all right? So let's see if that Redis cache that I provisioned at the beginning of the session, hopefully that's done. I'm going to say it's done. Yes, it is. Gov Tasks Manager. Here's our Redis cache right here. It's been provisioned. So now let's add this to the app. I'm going to come to my app settings here. And let's add a comma at the end of the line. And we're just going to add the connection string in here for the Redis cache. Okay. Now, someone's going to ask me, where did you get that connection string? So, and that is absolutely a good question. If I come over here to my Redis cache, I'm looking, I can see that I have, for example, access keys. There's my primary access key. There's my secondary access key. Or, by the way, if you just want the connection string directly, copy this, and the access and keys will be in that connection string. So you can copy the connection string right from the portal. All right? So I've got my Redis connection right here. So now what we want to do is let's come back to our startup code to make sure it knows about Redis cache. All right, so let's just add it right here. We're in our configure services method here. Okay, so I'm saving services, add distributed Redis cache right here, and I'm getting my connection string, and I'm just saying, yep, all right, I want you to use my Redis cache. Now we've just got to add it in the task repository anytime we get all statuses. So I'm going to come over to my task repository. I'm going to go to my get all statuses. This is the one-liner that we actually call when we're populating that dropdown. I'm just saying, you know, give me all the statuses, just put them in a list here, all right? So let's comment out that one line of code because we don't want to go to the database every single time. Okay, and I'm just going to put a little snippet of code. This is the standard cache aside pattern. Okay, So what we're doing here, and I'm getting this red squiggles because I need to inject my cache into the constructor. This is standard ASP.NET dependency injection. So let's do that here using a big font. So let's put some hard returns in here so we can see this a little bit better. So we're going to inject in iDistributed cache, and we'll put this right here, this.cache equals cache, control dot, put a line on line 17, and now we should be good to go. Okay, so in my get all tasks right here, it says, okay, first time you come in, let's try to grab it from the cache and see if you have it. If it's null, that means it's not in the cache. That means we need to go out and query it from the database, which we do on line 83, and then serialize it to JSON and stick it in the cache on line 85. And then we can return it. The next time we come into the method, it's going to, again, the first thing it's going to do is try to get it from the cache. This time, it's not going to be null. So it can skip this whole if statement. No need to go to the database anymore. Just return it straight away. All right? So this is the typical cache aside pattern that we use to say, is it in the cache? Great. Return it. If not, query it from the database, stick it in the cache, and return it. All right? So let's run it. Okay. And let me actually go over here to this incognito window, and let's refresh this one. All right, so add a new task. Oop. Verify the Redis password provided is correct. Oh, no one told me, no one fixed me. You guys got to stop me when I do something stupid. Okay, so come over here. Here's my connection string right here, gov task manager. And the password is insert password here, okay? That doesn't work since I just provisioned this thing. Let's come back over here and actually do the thing I showed you, which is grab the password. And let's copy it right there and let's try it one more time. So let me just do a quick rebuild so there's no question about it. Rebuild. But again, this I kind of want a couple things to go wrong because otherwise you don't believe it's real, okay? So now you know, yep, yeah, okay, he actually is caching this thing here. All right, so let's refresh. And we'll add a new task. At least I was nice enough in my snippet to put a placeholder for myself saying insert password here. So I add a new task. It has to go out to the database the first time. There's the list. I go out of the screen. I come back in the screen. Now I got that from the cache. It's very quick, lightning fast, and we're good to go. So, yes, the one little hiccup, but you saw how easy it was to add caching to my solution, fully managed, didn't have to worry about installing Redis and how many servers am I going to deploy Redis on and who's going to manage that whole cluster. I just can say, hey, I want to use the Microsoft Redis caching service, and let me put a couple lines of code to do it, and I'm good to go, and I have increased performance in my app now. Okay, so we're getting close here. We've got Active Directory, we've got SQL database, storage queue, cache. That last part in the middle, we still have this running locally on my laptop. We need to deploy this thing to Azure Gov for crying out loud here. So let's come in here, and I'm going to come back to the portal, and let's go to the Azure app, web app, Gov Task Manager that we created right here. And I am going to click this button to say get the published profile, and that's going to be downloaded right here to my downloads folder. I'm going to come over here, let's just close all this, to my Solution Explorer. And I'm going to right-click and say publish. And let's just import that downloaded published profile right here that I just grabbed. Here it is, Gov Task Manager, publish setting. Click OK. And we can publish. I've already enabled that, so let's go ahead and publish. And it's going to push that code up to the cloud. Now, if anyone wants to see what's in that publish profile, let me go over to my downloads folder and let's just open this in VS Code here. And we can see this is containing things like the deployment password you need that was generated when the site was generated. It's like this XML file here, so we can see things like, you know, the user password and what the endpoints are talking to. And you notice the endpoints are Gov endpoints, so you know it's deploying to Azure Gov and not Azure Commercial here. So those are the types of things that are in the published profile. Visual Studio allows you to get in there very easily and just import it, and bam, you can deploy it right from Visual Studio. In addition, most people are not deploying from Visual Studio. They actually have an automated process that does your deployments. The information contained in the published profile allows you to set up deployment targets and that sort of thing. Okay, now, we still, in order to make this work, we have to fix one thing here. I can copy this. You see I'm getting a sign-in error, and that's because our Azure Active Directory is still pointing, the app registration is still pointing to my local host. So it says, no, not so fast. So I'm going to come over here to Active Directory, and I'm going to go to my app registration. There's my Gov Task Manager. And in my redirectory URL, I'm going to change this instead of the local host. Oop, I copied the wrong thing. Let's just copy it. I'm going to copy it straight from the, do I have this up? Yes. Copy it from here. Put it right here. It has to be HTTPS. And let's save that, okay? In fact, let me start a brand new incognito window so there's no authentication whatsoever. And again, this has to be HTTPS, okay? So now we've pushed our app up to the cloud, Gov Task Manager. So I verified, yes, that's the app registration I want. And let's come over here, michelotti.gov.onmicrosoft.com. And now instead of redirecting me to my local host, it should redirect me to my Azure government web app running in the cloud, in the government cloud. Okay, it's the first time, and there we go. There's my tasks. Hello, Steve Michelotti. And you can see it has those same tasks that it's pointing to. I can add a new task. It had to go to Redis the first time. Second time, it happened real fast. And you can see the endpoint there is a .us endpoint. Of course, you can put your own custom domain name on there. By default, you know that's good indication that's going to Microsoft Azure Government Cloud. Okay, we have just a couple minutes left, and I just want to show you a couple more things. And I can, of course, can stay around for questions as well. The dashboard allows you to do some really cool customized things. Not just the fact that you can double-click in here and select a different theme, like if you like the dark theme, for example, or you like the blue theme or whatever the case is, right? I usually keep it at the dark theme. But you can create customized dashboards. I can say new dashboard, and I want a dedicated dashboard for my Gov Task Manager dashboard, let's call it that. And just by doing that, I can add some things here. So for example, I can add a resource group. Let's add that resource group where that's the Gov Task Manager resource group. And we can add things like like certain resources. So here's, I can add the Process Explorer. That was for my app service. I could add, for my Redis cache, I can add Redis cache metrics over here. I can come over here to my storage account and I can see, well, what are my total queue requests? I may not have actually turned on all this stuff yet because sometimes you want to back this with storage accounts, but I can say queue total requests. I can even come in here and I can do things like I can say general, and I can say I want to add, there's some other ones we can add here. I want to add a markdown part right here. And markdown is going to let me do things like put any custom thing I want here. This is my cool Gov Task Manager. And I can put any markdown I want in here. So for example, I can even put like an image, okay? Update, done customizing, right? So I can actually create my dashboard however I want it to look. And because I say, oh, I want to show my app architecture in the dashboard. You can do that. You can move these things around, my screen resolution is pretty small, so you can't necessarily, no data available. But I just am trying to show you this example of how you can actually customize the dashboard. And you can share the dashboard with other people. You can keep it private, keep it all to yourself. But these are these things you can do. Additionally, when we talk about Azure web apps, now that I have this thing deployed to that Azure web app, I can do scaling really easily. I can go in and just drag and drop the slider that says, hey, I want this to just automatically run on 5 instances of whatever that machine size I did. Or I want it to always run on 10 instances, or You can manually control that. Another thing is you have auto-scaling. Auto-scaling is not currently available today in Azure Gov. It is coming soon this year. Auto-scaling allows you to do things like set the scaling options based on the CPU. Maybe I want my CPU to always stay between 50 and 70%. And I want my max and min to be 2 to 10 instances. So if you're at 2 instances and it goes over 70% for more than like 5 minutes, it'll bump it up to 3, and then up to 4, and then up to 5. Or if it's sitting here and then it goes below 50% CPU and you're sitting here at 5 instances, it'll bump it down to 4, and then down to 3, and then down to 2, or whatever you've set the minimum to. This is how you can get really efficient use of your taxpayer dollars, because you are only spending what you need. If you had to scale up to meet some demand, great. You were able to do that. You kept everything running. Uptime was good. But then that went away. There's no more traffic. Don't pay for 10 servers running that are going to be running on 1% CPU. Let auto-scaling take you back down to 2 servers. Right? So these are the types of things that can save you real money in your organization. Okay. Let me pause here. What questions do you have on anything I've shown? Yes?
Auto-scaling, I guess, in order, like we had a runaway app, is there a way to, you know, have someone authorize, you know, beyond a certain point?
Yeah, so the question is, what if something catastrophic is happening in the app and we just need to keep going up? You have like the infinite scalability of the cloud, right? So if you need to scale up to 100 servers, it's just a support ticket to Microsoft, and we can enable that for you.
But you can put an upper limit on it.
Oh, you're talking about an upper limit, yes.
I'm worried about, you know,
yes. You can put an upper limit on it, saying, I don't want to go above 8 instances or something, but then if you do, your site's going to die. So you have to depend what's more important, having uptime on your site or the money. That could be 2 different answers. I mean, depends who it is. Okay, we're hitting our time here, so I'm going to stop. I will stay around for questions if other people have additional questions. Just real quick, the slides will all be downloadable, and all these links are here. It goes to our documentation, our free trial. I also want to plug our monthly meetup. We have a monthly meetup for AzureGov right here in DC. You'll see me there. You'll see other members of the team there every week, so definitely come to that. Additionally, we've had 14 Gov sessions here. These were all yesterday. There's some that are happening later today, including a demo I'm doing here after lunch on cognitive services in Azure government. So anyway, thanks everyone for coming.